You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Well, the men may have just started their first grand tour of the season, but the women have already finished one. And that's why we're back. The Cycling Podcast Femenine bring you this special Arrivé episode about the Vuelta Femenina. My name is Rose Manley, and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Denny Gray of the British Continental. I can see him down the line sitting there with his big calculator, his crystal balls, all the tools he needs for excellent insight, Denny.
Well, your introductions just get better and better, Rose. They really do.
I know. Well, that's because I just used to give you such a terrible, humiliating introduction that now I'm trying to big you up a bit more, Denny.
No, thanks for the crystal balls reference as well. I don't know what images that's conjuring up for listeners, but hopefully they're pleasant ones.
Well, we better stop going down that route almost immediately. But Denny, we've got loads to talk about, don't we, about the Vuelta Femenina. Obviously, this is going to be a Arrivé episode, so it's full of spoilers, full of us analysing exactly what happened. But it gave us plenty to talk about. It was a really interesting race. Almost every day there was kind of a new talking point, wasn't there?
Yeah, lots of storylines. A really kind of mixed, diverse parkour as well, which I think helped. But the racing itself was tremendous and very varied crashes. We had the tight team time trial, of course, mountain stages, some interesting sprint storylines, some new stars emerging. So yeah, it was there was plenty to talk about, which I'm sure we'll get into in a minute, Rose.
Yes, we certainly will. Well, I will give everybody a little reminder, and I have kept it as brief as you can keep it when there's eight stages to talk about, but a little bit of a reminder, an overview of what happened this week. In stage one's team time trial, it was Lidl Trek that came out on top, beating Visma, Lisa Bike and SD Works by only 1 second, Gaia Raylini getting the red jersey there. Two crashes in quick succession through stage two, sprint finish into chaos. Alison Jackson held off the rest of a small group, helped by a mighty lead out from her teammate, Kristen Faulkner. We'll be talking a bit more about EF Education Cannondale later on. Second placed Blanca Vass led the GC. Voss proved herself to be the best of the sprinters on stage three, comfortably beating Charlotte Kuhl. Then on stage four, crosswinds split the peloton to pieces. Faulkner came out on top from the breakaway, dropping everyone on the climb 6 kilometres from the finish, giving EF Education Cannondale its second win of the week. Voss took red. In the first major mountain stage, stage five, Demi Vollering dominated. Yara Kastelein and Elisa Longo-Borghini managed to follow the SD Works rider until the final 800 metres, but Vollering then struck out alone. She built a lead of 28 seconds on the rest and with that took the leader's jersey. It was almost more of the same on the mountainous stage six, but this time when Vollering struck for home with 500 metres to go, on La Laguna Negra, Evita Muzik was able to follow, the FDJ Suez rider coming past Vollering in the final 50 metres to take the win. Crosswinds whittled down the contenders for Stage 7's win, and it was Marianne Vos who outsprinted everyone on the ramp up to the line to take her second victory of the race. And on the final stage, stage 8, Vollering confirmed herself as a worthy champion with a commanding performance, which saw her ride most of the last climb out front and alone. Evita Muzik finished second on the climb, narrowly keeping out Rhianna Marcus, who was rewarded with second place on GC. Longo-Borghini, who struggled for much of the final climb, drifted down to third place on the overall podium. Vollering took this, her first Vuelta Femenina title, by 1:49. Now, it was actually an incredibly impressive performance from Demi Vollering, particularly considering that all spring, you know, everyone has kind of been questioning her form. She didn't get the classic season that she wanted. She didn't get a win when she'd actually won so much last year. But Denny, what a way of shutting everybody up, basically.
It was a completely dominant performance by Vollering, wasn't it? And as you say, we'd all put a question mark over Vollering after her performance in the classics. Not that she did terribly badly, but she was nowhere near the level that she was last year when she got that triple in the Ardennes Classics. But I think she'd ridden a composed race in the first half of the race. And then on stage five with the first mountaintop finish, she just rode everybody off her wheel, didn't she? I mean, she just powered, dieseled her way to the top of that climb, and no one could follow her. And all of a sudden, everything made sense for me anyway. I felt like, well, that's what she's been preparing for all this season, that kind of effort, that those longer climbs where you just put in that sustained effort. And clearly it's worked for her. She just looked unparalleled when it came to the climbing. We'll come on to stage six, I'm sure, at some point. But beyond that, no one could get near her. It really was an imperious performance.
She was the pushing herself, wasn't she? There was no one else kind of taking her to task. She was in all the mountain stages, basically leading it for most of the climb. She was out front, and there was no one that was kind of challenging her or attacking her from there. People couldn't get round, and she didn't seem like she was really on her limit either. I mean, obviously she was giving it her all and she was exhausted by the finish line, of course, but it didn't seem like she was really being pushed beyond her boundaries. She seemed very, very calm, very in control, you know, doing most of it all sitting in the saddle as well.
Yeah, it was a very controlled performance, wasn't it? And I think I felt during the classic season was that she lacked that kind of punchiness, that ability to kind of attack with a great amount of power and acceleration. But clearly on those longer climbs, that's not needed. And it wasn't the kind of a violent, aggressive attacks that kind of distanced her competitors. It was just that very controlled effort, kind of almost, she wasn't staring at her power meter a la Chris Froome, but it was almost as if she had a kind of effort in mind that she wanted to race, and she just paced herself up the climb. It was almost as if she wasn't that bothered about what her competitors were doing. It was a very, as you say, very controlled, very, very measured, and of course, very impressive.
But it was a little bit unusual, wasn't it? I mean, you mentioned there, touched upon stage six, which was the one that Evita Music won in the end, kind of out-sprinting her in the last 50 metres. But it was unusual to see, you know, the leader of the team, the leader of the race, doing that much work on the front for themselves when, you know, we had Marlon Reusser in her group, we had Niamh Fisher back a little bit further back. So you would think that the teammates would have been doing a bit more work. And we saw Demi Vollering on the front kind of talking into her race radio, kind of constantly looking around as if she was looking for her teammates. What did you make of that, Denny? Because we know that some people have been saying maybe that shows a little bit of ill feeling in the team, or perhaps they don't want to support Demi Vollering as much because of the fact that you know, she's not going to be staying at SD Works. We know that for sure next year because the team have said that already. And, you know, this rumoured million euro contract at UAE beckons, apparently. But what did you make of all of that, Denny? Her teammates not doing the early work on that climb on stage six?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't fall into the conspiracy theory camp. Maybe that's too strong a term, but certainly I understand that, of course, when a rider's in the last year of their contract, you can often see situations where they can be sidelined by the team. But I'm not sure SD Works would do that with Vollering, because she is the outstanding GC rider in the peloton today. She's their kind of card to win a lot of races this year. So it was more that she was just following what she did on stage five, which was just taking the race from the front. I know we shared this off air, didn't we, Rose? But we just felt that, well, certainly I felt that Reusser and Fisher Black just couldn't hold a wheel almost. You know, they couldn't come round to support her. I mean, it was an interesting tactic. You know, a lot of GC riders would have just sat back and let their rivals take the pace and just follow attacks. But she obviously decided she wanted to ride from the front. There was a bit of a headwind that day, and that's perhaps why she didn't go on to win the stage. She put in a lot of effort on that climb. But of course, I guess Vollering is also relatively new when it comes to riding Grand Tours. I mean, you kind of assume that she's this kind of master of riding Grand Tours because she has been just so dominant over the last year or so. But this is only the second Grand Tour, if for want of a better term, that she's won after the Tour de France Femme last year. So maybe it's just a sign that she's still learning her craft. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way she wants to race. But I certainly didn't think it was a sign of, I don't know, kind of infighting in the team or riders not wanting to work for her or the race director kind of ordering her teammates not to support her.
No, I think also, I mean, we know that, you know, riders, I mean, from talking to Lizzie Banks, you know that, you know, sometimes as riders, you're working for people that maybe you don't get on with, maybe they're not your friends, but that doesn't mean you don't do the work. So even if there was this kind of ill feeling between the riders, they're not going to be unprofessional and not do the work. And we did see Marlon Reusser come to the front, didn't we? We did see Marlon Reusser did eventually come to the front and try to put in an effort, but it was exactly at that point that the pace went out of that front group. And then all the riders that had been dropped by Vollering's effort started coming back in. So it was quite clear that Marlon Reusser didn't have the legs there, and she just couldn't, you know, make up the ground to the front of the race and then put in a strong effort. We should also remember that Marlon Reusser is coming back herself from having that crash in the Tour of Flanders, which is not that long ago, where she, you know, had her teeth knocked out. She broke her jaw, her ear canals. So I don't think we are also seeing Marlon Reusser at her very best in this race. And like you say, Denny, I think Demi Vollering was kind of just trying to take it from the front. But also, I think that Demi Vollering was a little bit more cautious this time, having been beaten by the likes of Elisa Longo Borghini in the classic season. I think she was probably a little bit more cautious that perhaps she just having won stage five by almost 30 seconds, but not quite, that wouldn't necessarily be enough at the end of the race. So she had to do the work. She had to try and ride her rivals off. She couldn't just wait for her rivals to pick up the pace. She had to get another margin on that stage and then another margin on the final stage to take the win. But I mean, it was a very assured win. I mean, the margin at the end was not huge. I mean, we've seen Annemiek van Vleuten win single stages by 1 minute and 49 seconds. But, you know, it was a very assured performance from Demi Vollering. But what of the other kind of contenders, Denny? Because actually, who ended up on the podium? Rhianna Marcus, Elisa Longo Borghini. Obviously, we'd be expecting Elisa Longo Borghini to end up there, but Rhianna Marcus was a bit of a surprise package to finish second. We knew she was obviously in good form, but you know, what of the other contenders? You know, why perhaps could they not match Demi Vollering on that course?
Actually, the race was determined to some extent, and it's not to, I guess, do down the performances of some of her rivals, but it was the GC spectacle was certainly hindered by crashes and illness in the first instance. Ashley Moorman-Passio pulled out of the race beforehand through illness. And I guess Cassie Nieva-Doma was pre-race seen as the big rival to Demi Vollering, given her form in the classics and how well she did in the Tour de France Femme last year. But she'd been suffering with illness after Liège-Bastogne-Liège. She hadn't ridden her bike before the Vuelta, I understand. And then, of course, she pulled out midway through the race because of illness. And then Gaia Raialini, the rider that Lidl Trek were gunning for, the GC, crashed out, of course, also suffered from kind of getting caught behind in the echelons on stage four as well. So there were, a number of moments which, I guess, meant that perhaps Vollering...
You're getting all emotional, Denny.
Just a frog in my throat. Not tears that Nieva-Doma had to pull out. That's Orla's job. But yeah, so I think unfortunately that kind of hindered the spectacle somewhat. But as you say, there were some really strong performances behind. There seems to be a kind of cluster of slightly younger riders that, you know, I guess over the winter we were wondering who's going to be Vollering's GC rival this year. And whilst no one really stepped forward in this race, there are a cluster of riders that, I was looking at everyone's ages in the top 10, they're all slightly younger than Vollering. You know, they potentially all got the potential to become her rival in the next few months and years. Actually, one rider, you mentioned Rhianna Marcus, and I know she was gunning for GC and she put in a very good performance, improving on her fourth last year. But one rider that really caught the eye was a rider you spoke to in your New Zealand special, Rose, Kim Kadso, who's only 22, from the EF Education Cannondale team, came 10th. And I think that bodes really well for her because she was the youngest rider in the top 10.
Yeah, we should also say that I know you mentioned the kind of those marquee riders that were taken out by illness or injury. But all of the teams were actually hampered by losing quite key domestiques as well. I mean, I think SD Works was one of the very few major teams to actually finish with a full roster of riders, because Little Trek also lost Van Dijk. She didn't start stage four. Obviously, she had a crash in that first stage. And she's so crucial. I mean, we saw last year how crucial Ellen van Dijk is to Lidl Trek. And without her, you know, that they lack that kind of ability to get into the right position at the end of the race. So she was out of it. Obviously, Canyon SRAM, not only did they lose Kasia Niewiadoma, as you said, but obviously they didn't have Neve Bradbury start. And she's been such a phenomenal climber.
And they only started with five riders, and they weren't even going to have a full team even before Neve Bradbury pulled out, were they?
Even before. And also to then see that actually they on GC, Canyon SRAM on GC, finished sixth for Bauernfeind and 11th for Niedermeyer. And to see those two riders still right up there on the very final stage, on the final climb. I mean, they were there. They were one of the very few teams. I think it was them and Fenix de Koninck who had more than one rider in those kind of front groups at the very end. Obviously, they weren't the leaders going into the week, because Kasia Niewiadoma was. So, and they missed out in the crosswinds. But obviously, if they had been the leaders, perhaps we would have seen them go up the rankings a bit. Those crosswinds actually were really crucial, weren't they, in the end? On stage four, we had crosswinds in the stage that Kristen Faulkner won. And that meant that actually Avita Muzik was caught out there. And actually, we didn't really think that any of the main GC contenders beyond Avita Muzik was caught out. But when you look at the GC now, the top 10 is littered with riders who lost 1 minute 51 on that particular stage. You know, so Muzik lost time, Bauernfeind lost time, Yara Kastelein, who was climbing so well, also lost time there. And actually, if Avita Muzik had actually... Obviously, it's all hypothetical, isn't it, to talk about it like this. But if she hadn't have lost that time on that stage four, you know, much more innocuous stage, then she would have actually been finishing second. She would have been finishing on the podium for the overall, because she had a phenomenal week, didn't she, Avita Muzik, apart from that kind of blip on stage four. But a great week for her and a stage win as well.
Yeah, really great week for her. And she's only 24. I know she, a lot of people in France, have had high hopes for her. She had to pull out of the Tour de France Femme last year through illness, but she extended her contract with FDJ Suez earlier this year until 2027. And I bet they're glad they did that then rather than now. But yeah, she looks really promising. She was, you know, obviously one of the most consistent, or if not the most consistent climber beyond Vollering. And that stage six win was fantastic. She said before the stage in an interview pre-race that she was going to try and follow Vollering's wheel and then come around her and win the sprint. And that's exactly what she did. It was a very, very impressive performance, and comes off the back of what's been a really strong season for her. I mean, she won a stage of the Giro back in 2020 when she was, I think, only 20 then. But this is her biggest win since then, perhaps the biggest win of her career. But as I say, it comes off the back of fourth in Flèche Wallonne, 15th in Liège-Bastogne-Liège. She got top 10s in Alfredo Binder and Strada Bianchi. So she's had a really consistent season and bodes really well for her and her future stage races.
And so much consistency as well. I mean, she finished second on that final stage as well. I think that's really important when you're trying to see these riders develop, this, that they have this consistency in stage racing, that they aren't just taking a kind of one day classic type mentality into these races, where they can really perform on one day and then the next day they're, you know, paying for the effort that they made on the day previous. So I think Avita Muzik shows a lot of maturity in that sense. And I think the same could be also applied for Rhianna Marcus, who really had to ride a proper GC ride, didn't she? Because she was, you know, sitting on, when it came into the final day, she was sitting in third on the provisional podium, and then obviously saw Elisa Longo-Borghini starting to struggle on that final climb. And we know that Elisa Longo-Borghini has since said, you know, she had a very busy spring and her body just couldn't have the capacity to keep going right to the end of that stage race. But yeah, obviously Rhianna Marcus sensed an opportunity there, and then she had to really ride. I mean, she was then riding to put herself into second position. It was, yeah, a very smart move, I think, and just showed that she has a lot of GC pedigree, which a few years ago, I mean, she was just a time trial rider. So she's come a long way.
Yeah, yeah. And a very great team role she played as well. She led out Mariana Voss, I think, on stage three, of course. And there was the team time trial in this race, but it wasn't an individual time trial. And it strikes me that, you know, if there's a Grand Tour where there is a good individual time trial, you know, that would really play into her strengths as well. So yeah, perhaps one to watch in those types of Grand Tours.
Yeah, she's definitely come through. I mean, I had a look at some of her Grand Tour performances in the past few years. You know, in 2019, she was 48th in the Giro. In 2021, 34th. I mean, I think these are times when she's not even thinking about doing it. She's not even thinking about being a GC rider. And clearly something has clicked for her that means that now she was 11th in the Tour de France Femmes last year, fourth in the Vuelta last year, and obviously getting second now. But you mentioned there, Denny, obviously the huge, you know, team role that Rhianna Marcus played for those Voss wins. Two wins for Mariana Voss. I mean, I do always think that we, you know, talk about Mariana Voss so much, but she always deserves to be talked about because it's a phenomenal record that she's got. And, you know, out sprinting Charlotte Kuhl, who, you know, next to Lauren Wiebes, we always, you know, hype up as the best sprinter in the world. And then winning on a very different sort of terrain, a much steeper finish, a kind of ramp up to the line. And just that typical Voss style, so cool, so calm. She knows when she's going to make the move and when it's the right move and when it's the winning move. She just knows.
Yeah, I mean, Voss in some ways is looking better than ever. She really does look brilliant this season, doesn't she? And it's so great to see her kind of riding so well. Yeah, two stage wins. It was no surprise. I mean, her wins, as you say, came in very different forms. But each time she was completely dominant. You know, she seemed completely in control. And it wasn't just about the way she rode in the final few hundred meters. It was the way she rode, you know, in the whole of the stages which she won, you know, kind of coming through crashes and crosswinds and positioning herself well. And yeah, the whole, you know, she is the complete package when it comes to that type of riding, isn't she?
Yeah, and I think also Visma Lisebike did so much of, you know, when we talk about the crosswinds, obviously it's not just the crosswinds that make the difference. It's also, you know, a team going to the front and pulling on the front and creating those echelons and creating those gaps in the peloton. That's what makes the difference at the finish line. We saw Visma Lisebike were very much doing that. They were the team that were doing that. They were the team that were bringing back the early breaks as well. So they're obviously feeling very confident for Mariana Voss, as they should do, and for Rhianna Marcus to get her in the right position. So an incredible team performance from them. And of course, you know, we saw Mariana Voss, she was wearing that dark green jersey, the points jersey, for most of the week, which I do think helps you go under the radar, because it used to be that kind of green jersey in the Tour de France was like such a bright sort of limey green that you definitely would be spotted a mile off. But that kind of dark green jersey, I actually think that helps you, because she just goes in the shadows. You can hardly see Mariana Voss until it's too late, until she's going past you.
Well, she won stage three in the yellow of Visma Lisebike, so I think it only helped her in one stage win. But yeah, it's an interesting theory, isn't it? The colour of your jersey kind of helping you to stage wins.
I just thought she was always so hard. I mean, that's obviously a sign of a good rider, isn't it? Where you can't really, you're not able to pick them out. They're just kind of in the group, and they're just kind of keeping their powder dry, and they're conserving their energy, and they're somewhere in the group. They're always there, but you can't really pick them out. I think that the dark, I mean, I like it aesthetically, but I don't think it's the right colour for the, you know, a leader's jersey. A leader's jersey should be bright. Yeah. And
I'm with you. It should be brighter. But I think Mariana Voss, to give her credit, might argue that she won because she was the best on the day on stage seven, rather than because she was wearing a dark green jersey.
I think Mariana would be right to argue that. I think she would be right. I agree with Mariana as well. But it's just something that I noticed when we were watching it. But great performance though overall from Visma Lisa Bike, and they almost got that win in the team time trial as well, losing out by fractions of a second to Lidl Trek in that actually quite nail biting. Because of the crash that there was on the final corner for Lidl Trek in that stage one team time trial. Another team that definitely needs to mention, though, is EF Education Cannondale, of course. They came away from this race with two wins, one for Alison Jackson, one from Kristen Faulkner. And we know that, Denny, you got your crystal balls out several months ago, didn't you, when we were together? That sounds even worse. And you were, you know, talking about how well EF Education Cannondale had been doing as a team. They're obviously a continental team. They obviously have a roster of riders that seem like World Tour riders, but technically they are a continental level team. And they have continued to do phenomenally well. And they've taken that kind of winning feeling into this, the kind of the biggest stage that there is for women's cycling, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're absolutely delighted with their race. I mean, they seem like a World Tour team in continental team clothing, to use a terrible analogy, to ruin a terrible phrase, rather. But only, I was looking up their wins again with my calculator earlier, and only SD yes. Works Pro Time have won more races than EF Education Cannondale this season. Lidl Trek have also run 10 races. That's how many EF Education have won. So, and when we spoke about them before, we were saying that they'd been winning in minor races, but these were two really big wins they had and taken in great fashion. I mean, Alison Jackson's win was fantastic, a fantastic sprint win. But we should also say that Kristen Faulkner, who obviously won the next day, she did a superb lead out for Jackson, because that was such a messy end to the stage. There were so many crashes in the final 3 kilometres. Jackson was off the front, wasn't she, in a small group of riders, but they were caught by a chasing group, which Faulkner was in, and Faulkner immediately went to the front and led Jackson out, which was, you know, fantastic teammates move. And I just loved Alison Jackson's celebrations at the end of the stage. I think that was one of my favourite moments of the race, going absolutely bonkers as only Alison Jackson can at the end of the stage, just grabbing and hugging everyone she could, leaping with joy. It was a fantastic
moment. Amount of energy she has is crazy.
Yeah.
To win a sprint and then be bouncing around and trying to get everyone to dance. And when Faulkner won, she was trying to get everyone to do a chant of EF Education Cannondale, EF. I think it's not quite the earworm that she was hoping for it to be. But I mean, that's what I loved about the way that Alison Jackson won there. Because, you know, when you have these chaotic finishes, what I really thought also about EF Education Cannondale in general, actually, is that when the opportunity arises for them, then they take that opportunity. And that is so key, because, you know, going in, you know, before the 3K mark where we had all those crashes in that stage, you wouldn't have been saying Alison Jackson is the one to watch here. You know, we're all talking about Voss, and if Voss is there, then, you know, everyone's done for. Or if Charlotte Kuhl is there, everyone's done for. And then you get into that state where she's in a small group, and like you said, Denny, they suddenly pivot and they're like, right, we have a real chance here. This chance is being dropped into our lap, so we have to take it. And it was a bit like that with Kristen Faulkner's win as well. She was on this very small ramp with a lot of the GC contenders, and she made her move, and Marlon Reusser was following her and then started losing time on Kristen Faulkner. But then when they got to the very crested, that little climb, the gap was minuscule with Kristen Faulkner in front. I mean, most riders would have looked around there and thought, it's just not worth it. I mean, if it's less than 5 seconds, it's not worth me kind of pursuing it. But she didn't. She looked behind, they weren't that far behind, and she just kept on. And in the end, those kind of GC contenders were more concerned about what each other were doing and who was going to chase it back. And all of them were kind of playing a game of chicken where they didn't want to be the one that had to, you know, bring Faulkner back. And in the end, you know, she won a stage. So it was like a phenomenal kind of opportunists win both on both of those days that they got the winner. And it's great to watch as well, isn't it? It's great to watch a team that will take that approach.
They were underdogs wins. I think people are learning that they shouldn't be classed as underdogs at all. They are one of the best teams kind of below the top tier. And yeah, Kristen Faulkner's win was superb, wasn't it? And it just, everyone always says, you always hear the commentators saying, you know, if you make an attack, just never look back, just keep your head down and keep going. And that's exactly what she did. She didn't hesitate. She just made the commitment to go and did it. And she time trialed. She has this brilliant position as well. It's almost like she is in a time trialing position, even though she's on the hoods, it's really sleek position, completely still. Yeah, brilliantly executed.
And we did see Alison Jackson was in that, because that was also a crosswinds day when Kristen Faulkner won. And we saw Alison Jackson was there in that front group. So it was nice kind of that those two riders could kind of repay each other. Alison Jackson was trying to, you know, keep that group away, that very select group with Kristen Faulkner in. So it was kind of nice to see them repaying each other and, yeah, you know, more celebrations at the finish, which is what we love to see. But yeah, it is remarkable how well they're doing, because I think I looked it up as well that 8 out of the 15 teams in the top tier, in the women's tour tier, haven't won a women's world tour race this season. So for them to come in and win 2 in a week, and also you mentioned Kim Cadzel, a fantastic performance for her on GC as well. So all round, a really successful week for them.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And I'm looking forward to, hopefully they can continue that kind of, I mean, because we remarked, Rose, didn't we, on how much we enjoyed Fenix de Koninck at the Tour de France Femmes last year, because they were such a joyful team to watch and they were...
I should just say, sorry, Denny, just to interrupt you, but that Fenix de Koninck, you know, who we give a lot of praise to, they haven't actually won anything this year, this season.
No. I mean, but I think I'd have to get the calculator out, but I don't think they had a great season up until the Tour de France Femmes last year. But I think what I love about them is just their swashbuckling attitude. And even in this race, there were moments where they were trying to kind of animate the race. Paulina Royakkers, who was such a kind of revelation in the classics, was often on the attack. And Yara Kastelein, again, was kind of up there on GC in a grand tour. So it wasn't a bad tour for them. Also, Flora Perkins, who's only 20, first year on their world tour team, she got 2 top 10s in some of those messy sprint stages. So I think some really positive signs for them, even though they didn't get a win.
And it's all, I think, you know, they're quite a young team. And I think all of it is important in terms of experience, in terms of not being caught out in those crosswinds and making sure your positioning every day is right, you know, not to relax on those sprint days. I mean, all the best of that. I mean, I remember Annemiek van Vleuten doing that way back when, in the kind of Orica days when she was at the Giro, and it was just an innocuous sprint day and she got caught out in the crosswinds and lost the pink jersey there. So, you know, it happens to everyone. It's kind of a process that riders and teams have to go through, where they have to learn that on a GC every day is important, even if you think it's not a GC specific day, or even if you think it's not a day for one of your riders. So I think it's what we're also seeing is a lot of the teams growing in confidence, in knowledge, and how to handle these situations, because really, you know, Grand Tour racing, you know, is a little bit new in the women's peloton, really. Obviously, we've, you know, not always had the Giro d'Italia, but had that race for a very long time. But not having a series of these, you know, important, longer stage races. We haven't necessarily had that kind of calendar where you're expected to be at the Vuelta and you're expected to be at the Giro and you're expected to be at the Tour de France.
Yeah, that's really... Yeah, really important to say, isn't it? And we kind of highlighted the fact that Evita Music could have got second if she hadn't got caught out in the crosswinds. But of course, as you say, that's all part of GC racing. And it was actually SD Works Pro Time who really showed their strength on that stage 4 Echelon's day, because everyone knew there would be crosswinds on that stage, you know, right from the beginning. So, you know, no one was unprepared, but they had 6 of the 19 riders in that lead group. Lidl Trek only had one rider. Longo Borghini. So I think that just shows how on the ball they were, and that a lot of other teams got caught out. I was going to say also that with the Grand Tours, I mean, obviously the Vuelta itself has kind of emerged into what people now call a grand tour because it's a longer stage race. You know, obviously it started out very differently. I was looking back at, I mean, if you could argue that the first year it was a grand tour in inverted commas was 2021 when it was five stages long and Annemiek van Vleuten won. Obviously the Giro's always been classed as a kind of grand tour, as it were. And then obviously the Tour de France Femmes is relatively new. So if you look at it from that lens, it's not been since 2016 that someone other than Annemiek van Vleuten, Anna van der Breggen or Demi Vollering has won a grand tour, which is when Megan Guarnier won the Giro. So the Dutch and those three riders in particular are just, you know, so dominant in that form of racing. It's quite stunning.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? It is quite ominous, you know, Demi Vollering's performance in terms of looking ahead to the Tour de France Femmes for sure. But obviously, you know, that's
She's not riding the Giro.
Yeah, obviously. So, you know, she won't be at the Giro. So it is an ominous sign about how strong she is for the Tour de France Femmes and for the rest of stage race. You know, we don't have just these Grand Tour stage races coming up very soon. In fact, is all the other Spanish stage races, which really give us kind of a good tell of, you know, how everyone's form is. Denny, who are you kind of tipping outside of Vollering for this kind of, who's going to go forth this season and might kind of rival her crown?
Well, you're really putting me on the spot, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. I'm getting those crystal balls out. Have a look. See what they say.
I always just clasp for the obvious answers, really. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Giro because Vollering won't be there, and that will be an opportunity for somebody else to shine. I mentioned those three riders that won all the Grand Tours. It will have to be another rider at the Giro, so that kind of run will be broken. I'd love to see Gaia Raelini go into that with kind of full health and not have any crashes, because she's shown so much promise, hasn't she, over the last couple of years, and obviously it's a home race for her. But I'm sure there'll be others that come through, and I really would like to see Cassia Nieva-Adoma go into the Tour de France Femmes up against Vollering, fully prepared and fully ready to take that on, because I think she's at the stage now where she could be Vollering's closest rival. So, you know, that they're fairly obvious names to pick out, but I think for me, Nieva-Adoma is the obvious rival to Vollering at this stage. By the way, do you know how many days it was since when Demi Vollering won on stage five? Do you know how many days it was since her last victory?
Oh, man, Denny. I would say, where's your giant calculator, the Cassia Nieva-Adoma? Where is it? I know you've taken it from me. And I can't. Oh, okay, I'm going to say, Denny, that's just my own calculator in my head, 270 days.
That's not bad, actually.
Is that not bad?
Not bad. 228. So not quite as long as that.
I know. I've ruined it now. I made it because I should have guessed low, shouldn't I? So then you could surprise me with your number. And now I've guessed too high. It seems disappointing.
No.
It was only that many days.
I was surprised it was that long. I mean, it was only 13 race days for her, but still a long time since she won the Tour de France Femmes, of course.
Well, we shall see if that winning form continues. I suspect, and this will be no surprise, that it might.
Rose,
she might continue winning.
Rose, you've put me on the spot. Who do you see as Vollering's challengers?
Gosh. I think that maybe, actually, I think Avita Muzik, actually, looks really good. Again, a little bit of an obvious name. But I think that if FDJ can, you know, if they didn't have Marta Cavalli for much of this race as well, she's obviously key. Cecily Ludwig needs to come back. So they actually have a very strong team. Grace Brown was obviously doing a lot of work, bringing back breakaways and setting up Avita Muzik on the climb. So I think they actually look really, really strong. And they kind of go under the radar as well. So I think Avita Muzik has a very good chance going forward to become the top. The queen of the stage races.
They were going under the radar.
But we shall see, won't we?
Going under the radar until you've just...
I see.
Maybe they should wear dark green jerseys.
Yeah, everyone should change to dark, shadowy coloured jerseys. Then no one will see them till the very end. Right, well, we shall see how correct our speculations are, won't we? We'll be back again with our regular Cycling Podcast Feminan episode towards the end of May, where we'll be catching up on some of the other Spanish races as well. But Denny, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rose. Enjoy your May Day celebrations.
Thank you. I will. Yes, I'll get the maypole out right now. That's what I'll be doing. And thank you very much, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.